Are you suggesting it wasn't
legit?
legit?
Oh, I might be suggesting that, but then watching them put Obama, even Leroy Colbert.
Welcome to the world of Muscle, Smoke and Mirrors, where it's all about muscle, health, history, training, nutrition, bodybuilding, and state of mind.
Hey, listener, you're back with another episode of the World of Muscle. This is episode 31 with Tomash and Randy.
Morning, Tomash.
Hey, Randy.
Beautiful morning today.
Beautiful morning. We opted to do this in the morning because last night I couldn't do it.
Well, you still worked. You just couldn't speak.
I couldn't speak.
That's okay. We're going to give it a whirl today on a very funky topic. We're going to speak on American presidential primaries. Why?
Why?
Is that why? Because it's so entertaining. For well, we're going to kind of tie in. It's like a macrocosm of bodybuilding. Bodybuilding is like a microcosm of what we're seeing in American politics. And we're hopefully going to lead this show into next week's show where we will talk about the American muscle monopoly, the article I wrote on the politics going on in bodybuilding today. But it's just watching, I've always followed American politics very closely, much closer than even our Canadian politics. So I always thought it was more important what happened in the United States than in Canada, because anything that happens in the United States affects anybody in the free world anyways. And I got into it about 25 years ago when Bill Clinton took office over George Bush, who was the incumbent president, and Ross Perot came in. I always thought it was kind of like a funky circus, and I didn't quite understand exactly what was going on. And I would learn later what was going on. In 1996 elections with Ross Perot was back again, Clinton regained office. It was amazing to watch, and I won't get into, I could do a whole show just on that. Again, in 2000, watching the baton turn back to the Bush family, and the joke back then in 2000 was, what would America and Canada think if this third world country had a father that was a president? A few years later, the son's running for president, and it's a tie. And the tie is going to be broke in the other son's state. Like Jeb, it was in 2000 where George Jr. ran, and the tie was broken in Florida where Jeb Bush, the younger brother, was governor at the time. Right? It was kind of like, come on, you know, what's going on? So again, 2000.
Are you suggesting it wasn't
legit?
Legit?
Oh, I might be suggesting that. But then watching them put Obama, even Leroy Colbert, who was a black bodybuilder, one of the first bodybuilders to have 21-inch guns, told a friend of mine, Steve Downs, who is going to vote for a black man by the name of Barack Hussein Obama? Well, we're going to probably find out nobody had to vote for him the way the elections go on down there. But Barack got in there, and Hillary I had enough with the politics. I wasn't even going to watch the elections this year because I was saying 4 years ago it's going to be another Bush-Clinton run, and it didn't matter who won because they're the same, and I didn't think that America could survive another 8 years of another Bush.
What do you mean they're the same?
Well, we'll talk about that. I've always believed that the Bushes are very, very powerful, and they are a very powerful family, and they have basically control over a lot of people, including the Clintons. But I was no way I could stomach either one of them. I wasn't going to watch it. And a friend of mine, mm-hmm. Monica, said to me, "Hey, are you watching Donald Trump?" And I said, "No, I'm not watching Donald Trump. I always thought he was an arrogant, pompous ass." And I said, I'm not watching the politics. I just can't stand listening to Hillary, or I can't stand seeing another Bush get in there. It didn't matter. So later on that day, that night, I was thinking, you know, I went online, and it was just like a little kid going underwater for the first time. I kind of held my...
Gave in to temptation.
Yeah, and I plugged my nose, held my breath, and went online and found a speech by Trump. Like I said, I used to turn the channel from it. I never minded when he spoke on economics, but... That wasn't too bad. I could handle that. But it's when he get into his other circus stuff, I said, you know, okay, I don't need to listen to this. But I started listening to him, and I'm thinking, it's the same. He's making sense. He's talking about the job hemorrhaging out of the United States, and he's talking about the uncontrolled border and all the stuff that makes sense, because I've always researched and studied the deindustrialization of North America, especially the United States, been going on for 50 years. Again, I could talk hours on this topic, and I can't. We only have 20 minutes or so, but I start to get sucked in, you know, because I'm thinking, you know, he is, but is he going to be like, he was like a political ass clown in one way, because 4 years earlier, he did the same thing, he just dropped out. And I thought he's going to do the same thing again. So I'm starting to tolerate him because I like listening to him talk about the economics, about the trade discrepancies with China, with Japan, with Mexico, and the way the jobs are going out across the border, and the way the total the Mexican border is just a four-lane highway, you know, back and forth, one way for illegal immigration, two ways for drugs and arms coming across there, and nobody's ever done anything. He's actually talking the truth about this. So I'm watching this, and this thing's starting to become unbelievable how Trump is just literally exposing the underbelly of American politics in terms of saying that it doesn't matter what the voter counts. Like he's these super delegates, these delegates, these caucuses, and all these things, and the electoral and the major elections. It's basically controlled votes, which I always believed for several years now, but now he's literally exposing this big time. And we saw this in Colorado and Wyoming. And basically, he's got now, he is winning. He has so many people that he's resonating with. I speak to a lot of people in the States, and many of them were kind of hesitant to say so when we started talking about many things, but they're all, every single one of them is going to say they're going to vote for Trump. None of them said they want Hillary in there. They said that's not her. They don't want her as president. The Clintons are just drenched in criminality. Hillary may even be indicted. She might even not even make it to the elections. And these emails that she's supposed to be in trouble with, it's, you know, breaking national security. That's just the tip of the iceberg. I think they want to get at that tax foundations or the Clintons tax foundation. It's supposed to be a money laundering capital of the world. But I mean, she's just goes back. Her whole career is drenched in background criminality. It's amazing how she is still able to run for president. And like I was saying, Trump is actually scaring the shit out of this, not just the Republican establishment, not just the Democratic establishment or the media, but the entire umbrella establishment that control what I call the architects that control everything. Now, I sent you a quote from Carol Quigley, Professor Carol Quigley, that I have drafted in the two chapters that I've talked about these chapters a couple of times that I wrote 3 years ago. They're very politically incorrect. They're very politically controversial. And I'm going to publish them soon.
So unlike your book, it actually has some polarization to it.
It has some I believe it's very factual historically of the 20th century compared to what we've been taught. And Quigley, I'll let you.
Okay, let me read it.
Let me first give a little background. Carol Quigley was a professor of history at Georgetown University. It's a prestigious Jesuit university where Bill Clinton earned his Rhodes Scholarship. And Quigley was a mentor to Bill Clinton, and Clinton even quoted Quigley in his inaugural speech. Carol Quigley wrote a book, a 1,300-page book called Tragedy and Hope, released in 1966. I read it. And he wrote another one called The Anglo-American Establishment. Quigley, that book was pulled from circulation because he exposed a lot of what was going on with him in terms of international banking and through the history that he wrote. It was believed that the book slipped through the cracks of rigor because the editors figured it was just another huge historical textbook by Professor Quigley. Who wants to put your hands up? Who wants to edit this 1,300-page book? And they kind of relaxed there, and it got through, and then they realized what he was revealing, and they pulled it. Because Quigley in the book said he had actually had access to the archives of the Council of Foreign Relations, which was a globalist organization that is very popular in name today. He had access to the archives back in 1962, and he was spilling some beans, including this tunopoly of this two-party system. So read that quote I sent you.
Okay, so here's the quote by Professor Carol Quigley. The national parties and their presidential candidates with the Eastern establishment assiduously fostering the process behind the scenes moved closer together and nearly met in the center with almost identical candidates and platforms. Although the process was concealed as much as possible by the revival of obsolescent or meaningless war cries and slogans, often going back to the Civil War. The argument that the two parties should represent opposed ideals and policies, one perhaps one of the right and the other of the left, is a foolish idea except blank. to the doctrinaire and academic thinkers. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical so that the American people can throw the rascals out at any election without leading to any profound or extreme shifts in policy. Either party in office becomes in time corrupt, tired, unenterprising, and vigorless. Then it should be possible to replace it every 4 years if necessary by the other party, which will be none of these things, but which will still pursue with new vigor approximately the same basic policies.
Yeah, what he's basically saying, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, D or dumb, it doesn't matter, Tweedle's still in control. The people, even in, look, I'm not a Canadian throwing stones from a glass house. It's the same here. It's the same in any free world country. There's polar ideologies, you know, left, right, conservative, liberal. CNN is not a news organization. It is a left-wing advocacy attack group. Fox News is not a news organization. It is a right-wing advocacy attack group. Each ideology has its newscast, and each one thinks that's the bastion of truth because it more represents their beliefs and philosophies. But in actuality, what Quigley is saying is the truth. Look at both, go back to sort of the past 25, 30 years. You've had the Clintons and you've had the Bushes, left and right. What's changed? Anything? No. $20 trillion in debt. So along comes Trump. He starts exposing this system that the people really don't vote. An example, because they can manipulate these delegates. Next week, we'll see how Ken Sprague demonstrated this with the AU, how he manipulated the delegates to put Jim Manion in power and to keep him in power. They do this at the presidential level, picking the nominees, where Colorado, they had just decided the people aren't going to vote in August, I guess. They decided they're going to just have a convention and assign all the delegates to Ted Cruz. So the people had no say, and they did it in Wyoming, and Cruz is out there bragging that, you know, he's winning by landslide, and basically he's not getting any popular vote at all. And they're openly admitting now on the news that we're not a public organization, we are private, and we can do what we want. We can change the rules when we want. In other words, we don't want Trump in, and if he doesn't hit the 1,237 delegates, which he needs to get the nomination, we're going to go to second, third rounds, so we're going to basically take it away on him. And they're basically telling millions of people, screw you, you don't select. And the Democrats are just as bad with their superdelegates. The superdelegates control either 10 or 100 other delegates. Bernie Sanders getting ripped off over there, too. I'm not a real fan of Bernie. I have a soft spot for Bernie, but I mean, if you a Bernie presidency, would probably come along with a 70% tax rate because he's such a socialist. But he's getting ripped off. The Hillary Clinton is... She was almost ordained. Like, she's such a liar. I knew she took a Senate seat in New York because she planned to run, even though she said, I'm not running. Of course you're running. Hillary, you're lying. Again, she ran against Obama and she lost. And she's I'm not going to run again. Of course she's lying. She's going to run. And she's running. She was almost going to run unopposed, right? So Trump, I think, surprised these guys. And with the such numbers coming out to vote, they can't control it. So they're threatening to basically steal the delegates. Now, again,
so do you think it's even possible for Trump to win under these circumstances?
Well, that's ways to be seen, because if he doesn't make 1,237 delegates, it's going to go to an open convention and they can go to second, third rounds. Now these delegates, they have unbound delegates, a real ridiculous system where they're not obligated to go with who, say Trump won Nebraska or something like that, and there was like 10 delegates or something like that. They have to vote for Trump the first round, but the second round, and say some of them aren't bound. They can vote for who they want. It's ridiculous. They should go to represent the vote. If the candidate won that state, then those delegates should remain bound to them. But can you imagine?
So really, there is no hope.
No, there's hope. Like, I mean, Trump is probably going to get his 1,237 delegates before the convention, which means by rule that he is the nominee. But
didn't you just say that they can give those delegates to whoever they want?
If he comes in at 1,230, he's seven short. They can actually go with that and say, well, he didn't hit the quota, the mark. So we can go to an open system and then start negotiating with these delegates. Can you imagine Trump coming in and says he's at 1,200 and Cruz is like 500-600 back, 500 delegates back, and say 5 million voters short, and they're going to say, we're going to take it from Trump and give it to Cruz? You know, Cleveland's going to go up in flames. Like, I mean, there's tens of thousands of people possibly heading towards Cleveland in July at the Republican convention when they actually select their nominee. But if Trump, they figure the Bush family, Mitt Romney, and that hardcore gang is hellbound to not let Trump get in. But if he's got all the delegates, they have to let him in. Because if they take it from Trump, those millions are going to be so irate that it's basically a guaranteed walk-in for Hillary if she's not indicted. But, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting July. Like, some people still think Trump's a player and that he's just fulfilling his role. Others think, as I mentioned, that he took them by surprise. Others even think that Trump's being used because they're going to – the United States is in big trouble, $20 trillion in debt, and financially that they could let Trump in and crash the system around and blame it on him. What's going to happen? I don't know.
What do you mean? Let me just go back a little bit. You mentioned some people think he's still a player, meaning that he's just there to
– one of the boys. But Trump isn't – like I said, he is an elitist, but he's not from the same realm as, say, the Clintons and the Bushes, who have a different relationship with banks than Trump does. Trump is not into the pharmaceuticals. He's not into oil. He's not heavily into the military industrial complex like that. He's a builder. He's a manufacturer. So when he gets up there blowing his horn that I'm a millionaire, multi-billionaire, whatever, so can you. It really is in his best interest that the United States is successful, for him to be even more successful. And he's pointing out the truth, and he's calling these people. At first, when he said, "We know we have stupid people negotiating for us," I thought, well, no, that's not true. You have corrupt people. You don't get the $20 trillion in the debt by accident. It's by design. It's called the deindustrialization in the United States, and it's been going on for decades. It's been written about for decades. I was reading it 25 years ago. The things happening today were predicted then, and I'm finding out it was written back even further. That he's exposing a lot of this corruption, and it is being exposed. And look at, did you hear what happened in the news last week with Dennis Hastert?
No.
Dennis, either Hastert or Hastert, was the Speaker of the House from 1999 to 2007. That means for that period of 8 years, he was the third ranking power in America behind the president and the vice president. Well, he just got a slap on the wrist for 15 months in prison for as the judge labeled him, a serial child molester, right? So here we go. A man in this power, he only got 15 months because the statute of limitations ran out and they got him on actually making payoff to one of the victims. But this goes on all through politics, you know, even in bodybuilding, talking with Sprague. I even wrote in volume two, he said, back in those 70s, the guys snooping around Gold's Gym were very recognizable names in politics, Hollywood, and the media. And the same thing going on in higher levels of politics. Anytime with Dennis Hastert here, John DeCamp, an ex-senator of Nebraska, wrote a very controversial book called The Franklin Conspiracy, or The Franklin Cover-Up, talking about the pedophile rings that were running up in the highest office of power back in the 1980s. It all gets brushed under the...
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. Like, I mean, even Judge, you know, Judge Scalia that just died? Well, there's already writers coming out saying where he was, and that ranch was known as the Little Boy's Ranch, right? Very hot potatoes, but that's why he... No autopsy, nothing. That was just, boom, he's gone. Brushing on the table. Like Franklin's book is out there. And he's, like I said, he's an attorney. His name is John DeCamp, the attorney who wrote the Franklin Conspiracy. He's an attorney, John DeCamp. He's an ex-senator of Nebraska. And he said, you think this nonsense is confined to Nebraska? He said, it's nationwide. Very, very controversial book.
Okay. Let's get back to the topic though.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but these are things people don't like to talk about. And Trump is exposing, and some of the stuff I just mentioned, when it gets in, there's more and that Trump could be exposing in terms of the Clintons and Bill Clinton. And this will be interesting, like I said, if anything, a Clinton-Trump presidential run will be very interesting, very entertaining. And again, it's just a bigger version of what's going on and being exposed in the field of bodybuilding. And that we can talk about that next week with the lawsuits, and we can make available that article, The American Muscle Monopoly.
Awesome. And when is that actually being published? Do you have a date?
I think the online Muscle Sport Magazine, the spring edition, I think it's online now, but the magazine itself, the hard copy magazine, I think is out by next week.
Okay, so that's perfect timing.
Joe Patero, who is the editor of the magazine, gave permission to send that article anywhere we like, so we can give it away to our readers or have them, they can download it from our site if they want to read it.
Sounds good. Okay, so we'll just stop there. Is there anything else going on?
I can mention an update that those chapters I was just talking about, where we got that quote from, are going to be part of my ongoing ebook manual, training manual that I'm putting out, and your tips are being underway.
This week I went to a university lecture, University of Toronto. They had a speaker come from Cambridge, Massachusetts, from MIT. She's a senior researcher at MIT. Her name is Dr. Stephanie Theffen. And if I messed that up, I apologize. I believe that's her name. And she was talking about glyphosate.
Oh, the
Roundup.
Yeah.
So Monsanto's Roundup, the weed killer.
Yeah.
And it was not, you and I both know a lot about the chemicals that they use to treat weeds. But she explained, she's literally, it wasn't even her chart, but there are studies done that correlate the use of Roundup or glyphosate and autism in the U.S. And the chart shows a 0.9972 correlation of the two. So the more Roundup they use, the more autism we've had. And the perfect correlation would be 1.0. So it's as close as it gets. Anyway, that along with what happens to your food, any food. She says she's not even all that worried about she is worried about genetically modified foods. But she says the glyphosate that she's done research on just trumps it in her mind right now.
Yeah, it's so they can spray the weeds, but the plants that are genetically modified are immune to the spray.
Well, that's exactly. So they've created those genetically modified plants so they don't get affected by the spray, but the weeds die. And how glyphosate came about, Steve actually told me, our the farmer we get our food from, that glyphosate came about by they were using it to clean boilers. And when they poured it on the grass, it killed the grass. So what an idea. Let's use it to kill weeds because it kills everything. But yeah. they had to save the plants or the genetically modified crop like corn and...
The very plants and animals were defiled.
Exactly. Oh, there you go. Anyway, that's my news and update that got me kind of upset with what people are doing. And this is the only hope is to go with organic food.
Yeah, Mark Kohler writes a lot about glyphosate because it's in GMOs and stuff like that. Even with autism, again, there's that. There is still a mercury connection, but the mercury, I think, is just the brink that puts them over the brink. You know, they're already compromised with stuff like that, with a very compromised ecosystem, a microbial ecosystem that's completely Natasha Campbell McBride. Her work was based on the fact that she got a lot of results reconstituting children's intestinal tract with probiotics, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're compromised. So we're finding out just how much germs had to do with our immune system and the brain activity, the food and gut reaction. Her GAP diet, gut and psychology.
Yes.
You know, so all these chemicals are all just messing up that psychology in these kids, and they know it. They know it.
Well, that's just one thing. And then there's other, like she related it to MS and many other things.
Yeah.
And explained the science behind it. And I mean, this is what she's been researching for decades, but I that's just a quick recap. We're going to do a show on this stuff sometime in the future because it is relevant. Okay.
All right. So yeah, that one was one of the sideshow, but I didn't have to research that one at all.
No.
Right. Because it's, and we'll talk about the MOPS, muscle monopoly, then we can do a steroid one, then we can do your tips, then we can do the GMO one.
And listener, if you have anything you want to hear us blabber on about, let us know.
All right.
Thanks, Randy.
Thank you for listening to the World of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this episode, and we're looking forward to sharing more next time.